recording this?
Yeah.
Oh, Robert. Oh, no, no, it's fine. I'm Brett Zika, or Brett Z. I'm an alcoholic.
Circus movement.
Thank you. Right on. This is Santa Maria, right? Okay. We don't have those kinds of horns in San Luis Obispo, or where I'm from, for that matter. As you can tell by the lavender shirt and just the whitest white guy look. He's more of a badass white guy. Thank you, Robert, for having me come down here. I have a sneaking suspicion that Craig is behind it, my sponsor. So I'll have to get him back for this. Let's see here. I absolutely loved drinking. It was like my favorite thing ever. I never, up until that point in my life, had, you know, found anything that was simply as magical as what alcohol and drugs. Can I say drugs here? Okay. Alcohol and drugs, brought to my life. I really shouldn't be, as miserable and rotten as I am. I am a card-carrying member of a club that I founded. It's called the Love Too Much Club. Basically, what that means is that when I was raised, I was just led to believe that I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I never wanted for anything. I wasn't beaten or neglected. I was just, carted off to soccer games and, given the latest pair of Regal Buck pumps or, whatever I had to have, Lego, you name it. My grandma, she's the founder of the Love Too Much Club. And what had happened was is that she and other people in my family had led me to believe that, I could do no wrong. It's funny. It's just like in Alcoholics Anonymous, when somebody hurts us, we take that to our sponsor or whomever it is. It's just like, well, what is your part in that? And I tell grandma that somebody hurt me, and they're like, they can't do that to you. I'm so angry at them. So what basically had happened was that I didn't really learn any personal responsibility. I was just a spoiled, rotten, selfish, self-centered little kid. When I went out into the world, what I found was that I wasn't the greatest thing since sliced bread. I wasn't that special. I could do wrong and frequently did. And, the way that the world reacted to my behavior was not as favorable as I would have liked it to be. I struggle with that. Growing up as a kid, it wasn't all perfect. It wasn't perfection. My parents got divorced when I was 6 years old. That caused a lot of chaos and trauma and whatnot. And I didn't get along very well with my mother, who I lived with. The way that I was taught to interact with people, especially those closest to me in my life, was that, the person who won an argument was the person who was yelling the loudest at the end of it. And so, we just scream at each other. And, we scream at each other. I could think of nobody but myself and what I wanted. And it's a difficult way to kind of make your way through through life. So, I always wanted things to be fair, or at least my interpretation of fair, which is me getting what I want. And, when things, weren't fair, I didn't like the way that made me feel. I think, I'm pretty sure I have, adult attention deficit disorder. I had it as a kid. And I mean, I just generally kind of moved through the world annoying people. Is really kind of how like I look at my life. And so it was difficult for me to keep friendships. Like, people, after a little while, they realized that we don't really like this guy anymore, so we're going to ostracize him. You know, I wasn't the cool kid. Like, it, you know, like, my mom took me to see a therapist when I was a kid. And it just so happened that I played Little League baseball with her son. And I was riding the bench. And, like, one game I was supposed to, you know, actually start at second base, and our coach missed that game, and the assistant coach was the husband of the therapist, and he started the therapist's son at second base instead of me. So what I come to realize at like a really young age is that the world was out to get me, and that everything was just bullshit, and nothing was fair. So My mom was very strict. You know, do the thing like where I'd come home and she'd be like, empty out your pockets, let me smell your breath, you know. And so like I couldn't really get away with much. I tried, you know, I started smoking weed just to get out of myself because I saw the bad kids and they looked like they were having a good time and I was a loser, so I wanted to try and do what the bad kids were doing. By the time my youngest sister hit puberty, you know, I was really outgunned in my house. I was 16 years old, and I moved in with my dad. And my dad lived 45 minutes away to 3 hours away, depending on what the traffic was like in Los Angeles. And my dad was a really hands-off kind of guy. You know, my mom, she wanted me in at a certain time. I couldn't get away with anything. My dad, you know, I'd wake up and I'd go to school on Friday morning, and he would basically look at me and say, have fun, see you Sunday afternoon. And so when I got down 16 years old living with my dad, I could do whatever I wanted. And I was a new kid at school, and I started drinking, and I started going out to parties. And it was basically everything I'd ever wanted, you know. Like, I felt, everybody in here probably knows what it feels like to get nice and drunk. It's wonderful. And, you know, to feel the sort of release of all of the guilt and shame and self-hatred and all the BS that we carry around with us constantly, and to be able to just be free. And that happened for me, and I absolutely loved it. You know, in the book, one of my very favorite lines in it is, alcoholics are people who are unable to control when they drink or how much they drink once they start drinking. And I'm definitely the latter. The very first time I drank, like in earnest, other than having like a sip of a beer or something, like sitting around on the table, you know, I took a fifth of tequila, I poured it in 2 liters of Diet Coke, and I drank it all in like 20 minutes. And it was a problem. It was like, it was good for like, it was really good for like 25, 30 minutes. It was the greatest feeling ever. And then, you know, after that, it was, you know, it was kind of rough. But, you know, just bathroom floors, that tile is so cool. It's so nice. Put your face on it. I'm down there, I'm in high school, I'm with the cool kids, I'm getting to party as much as I want, do as much drinking and drugs as I can, you know, kind of get my hands on, and, I'm really loving it, I'm really having a great time. And so, I'm getting in trouble, you know. I got pulled over for a DUI. I managed to wiggle my way out of that one. You know, but run-ins with the cops, you know, getting beat up. I had a black eye to prom and graduation. You get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you can find a little integrity. for yourself. I didn't really quite have any of that yet, so I had a thing for girls with boyfriends, and I'm really easy to beat up too. So, you know, I wasn't really that smart in retrospect. What happened was is I got out of high school. I came up to San Luis Obispo to go to college. And, you know, just kind of kept doing the same thing. I mean, but with an even longer leash, you know. And when I got to college, you know, like, I was partying very, very hard. And, you know, I was having a really, really good time. And I had like a 1.2 GPA like my first quarter in college. And, you know, my mom's like, and they like would send your parents like your report card. Like I tried to figure out how to stop that, but there was like some, like I couldn't. And she looked at me, she's like, yeah, it's not what we're sending you to college to do. Like if you don't do better, you know, you're done. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, I was such a petulant, indignant, asshole little kid, you know, that just wanted to give my mom because, you know, I looked at her as the reason for all of my pain and suffering in the world. So I wanted to make her life as miserable as possible, you know, which I did a good job of doing. And, you know, so like, I never did well in school. I knew I could, but like, I knew that's what she wanted, so I wouldn't do it. And my seventh grade teacher told her that I had Nordstrom ability and Kmart effort. And she's a teacher. And she tells parents of children in that situation that same thing. She likes that one. I think it's pretty funny too. So I realized, I was like, oh shit, you know, I really like it here in college, and I want to stay. And I don't want to have any excuse for them to take me away from this place. So, like, the next three quarters, I had 4.0s. And it was funny because they're just like, what are you doing? Like, what happened? You know, and it was just like, I had found something, drinking, you know, and I realized that I was willing to go to any lengths, you know, including applying myself academically so that you couldn't take that away from me, you know. And so the great thing was like, I would come home for Christmas, you know, after, like a 3-day run and like still drunk, and you know, like they'd be like, you're a mess, and I'd be like, did you look at my report card? Yeah. I'm like, what else do you want from me? And she's like, okay. So that's just an example of just like, you know, it's like, okay, like nothing meant anything. I'd never found anything in my life that I was willing to like earn and work for like I was drinking. It was just like, I look back at my drinking, and it got to a place where everything in my life revolved around drinking. So it's just like, when I wasn't drinking, everything else I did was just a matrix to hold together the times that I drank. So like, going to work, going to school, like the things that you have to do, you know, as a human being, like those were all just things I had to do in order to keep drinking the way that I wanted to drink. I knew pretty early on that I had a problem. Because, you know, you look around and it's like, I surrounded myself with people who drank like I did. I mean, I joined a fraternity, you know, it's like, you know, they're still like, I was the dude they looked at, and they're like, dude, you have a problem, man. You know, it's just like, these are people with problems. And they're looking at you, and they're like, you have a problem. And I did a lot of stuff. You know, I did as much as I could to demonstrate to myself, you know, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I really, really, really didn't want to be an alcoholic because I loved drinking so much. And I knew that if I were an alcoholic, that would mean that I would have to stop drinking. And that scared the shit out of me. But I kind of always knew that I had a problem. And that was because, you know, once I started drinking, I really couldn't stop. I could choose not to drink on, you know, certain days. But then, you know, eventually, when it came time to drink, I was going to get as drunk as I possibly could. So it was early as, like, maybe, like, freshman year of college, like you know, I have like these little breakdowns where I get arrested. I have like 10 or 11 alcohol related violations in San Luis Obispo in like a 4-year period. I got the drunkard bingo, you know, so I got like minor in possession, urinating in public, DUI, you know, like I got like all of that. I got all the alcohol. I got them all. I got some of them more than once too. And so, you know, but like the consequences still weren't outweighing the benefits of the drinking. You know, you kind of like, you know, obviously when you start, it's like, you know, benefits are like way up here, consequences, you know, and then it kind of just it starts going like this, and then it kind of goes like this. You know, and there were times when it would swing, you know, we get some consequences, and I'd be like, all right, I have a problem. I'd go see my hippie aunt. She lives in San Luis Obispo. She's a psychic intuitionist. She does all kinds of healing for people, you know, with herbs and spices and, you know, like talk therapy. And I'd be like, you know, like Aunt Josephine, like, I got a problem. And she'd be like, all right, let's write down, like, what you want in life. Like, what do you want in, like, a relationship? Why are cigarettes bad? Why is booze bad? And I'd write it all down and, you know. And then, like, you know, the next time I went to a party, I'd have, like, 3 or 4 beers. And then the next party I went to, I'd be blackout drunk. So, you know, but I had these little times where I was, like, trying to calm it down. But they never really stuck. So, I got a DUI. So, my thinking was that I would graduate from college, and I would go, you know, get a job and be a normal person, and then I would stop drinking like I drank because that was just what you did in college. So, are you guys familiar with millennials and the idea of what a millennial is? You know, it's this person who thinks that they're entitled to everything and, you know, the world is just going to come knocking down their door. So I'm a millennial. And so I graduated from college and I was just like kind of waiting around for somebody to give me a job. That didn't happen. I had to move back to Los Angeles with my mom. You know, I'm sitting there, I'm getting drunk every day, living with my mom, 22 years old, proud, independent, college alcoholic, now living with mom. You know, mom comes home, she's like, I'm not going to see you on this couch one more time, you're going to go get a job. She got me a job, you know, through a temp agency. I'm selling dental supplies over the phone. It's, you know, I've got a big ego, you know, it's just, times are tough, you know, being in that situation, living with mom, and just kind of not finding my way in the world. And, you know, I'm drinking. Thursday, they had this bar at Universal City Walk, and it was 50 cent beers. And then they also gave you, like, 2 free packs of cigarettes for filling out this survey. So I was there every Thursday night. You know, and I was like... And so and I would go to work on Friday still drunk, or I wouldn't go to work on Friday. But my mom, you know, she gets up and goes to work every day because she's a normal human being. And so what I'd have to do is I would have to, like, pretend like I was going to go to work. I would get in my car. I would drive a couple blocks away. I would sleep in my car. I'd wait for her to go to work, and I would come back and go to sleep. And not go because I, you know, I couldn't call in sick to work and tell my mom she knew I was drunk, so... The kind of the low part for me there was I did that little routine one day, you know, and she left for work, but then she came back for some reason. And I saw her car pulling up, and I'm hiding in, you know, in the closet of my childhood room. And I can hear her. Like, she doesn't know I'm there because I still park down the street, so, like, it's not in the driveway. My car's not in the driveway. And I can hear her moving around the house, and she opens the closet door, you know, and there, you know, I am, just 22 years old, hiding from my mother in my closet because I'm too drunk to go to my job selling dental supplies on the phone, and, you know, it's not that glamorous, not what I envisioned for myself. So anyways, that... Job selling dental supplies over the phone. That was with DenMat. So I'm sure a lot of you guys are probably familiar with DenMat, you know, just right down the street over here. And then they had a job in marketing, which is what I went and got my degree for. I got my, I went to college to party, and then like I realized you had to get an education. So I just picked the easiest thing I could find. It was marketing. So then I end up back in San Luis Obispo, you know, and I'm stoked. About a year after I graduated, things are really coming together. I get a DUI after a beer festival, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, like I blow a stop sign with four people in the car, I blow a .25, you know, and I hadn't had a drink for a few hours, which I thought meant that I was like, okay, I actually passed out. I'm like, that was sleeping and you haven't been drinking, so you're probably okay to drive. And that was alcohol related violation, you know, number 8 or 9, and go to Hippie Aunt. She bails me out of jail. Go there, talk about, hey, look, I got to straighten this thing out. So I quit drinking for 6 months. No AA, just holding on, you know, like the cat in that poster, the hang in there poster. And my life got better, you know, like if you take drinking away, you know, like I got back into shape, you know, like I'm doing better at work, like I'm feeling good. But I know I'm going to drink again, you know, there's no program of recovery in my life. And so 6 months after I quit drinking, I go around to every family member, you know, and I ask them, I said, hey, you know what? Like, I think, you know, my problem drinking, that was just kind of like a phase that I had in college. And, you know, I haven't drank for 6 months. So I think, you know, I'm going to give it a shot again. I think I've matured and that everything's going to be okay. And every single one of them was like, no, that's a terrible idea. You know, like your life's getting so much better because you're not drinking. Like, why would you want to drink it? And then I went, and I told the Hippy Dippy Aunt, and she looked at me. She's like, I think it's a bad idea. And she's like, maybe not, like, maybe it's an okay idea, you know? And I was like, I think you're right. And so what I did was I put together a situation, right? So I was like, I'm going to have 3 or 4 beers once a week. And if I can't have 3 or 4 beers once a week, I'm going to quit drinking for good because I know I'm an alcoholic. Now, who in here has had 3 or 4 beers? Like, and stopped at 3 or 4 beers? Okay. It's miserable. It's like the worst, like it's the worst feeling ever. It's literally torture. I have like a euphemism for it. I've used it in other meetings, but I've grown up a little bit. It is kind of off color. I won't use it, but it's fine. Okay. Look, okay. So having 3 or 4 beers is like playing just the tip and losing. So, you know, it's like you're just getting started and then you have to stop. Like, you know, like it's perfect. Yeah, it's perfect. Okay. So if anyone has to have that explained to them, please don't ask to have it explained. You probably don't even find one here. Okay. So I hope somebody learned something new tonight. Help keep them sober. So I'm having like, you know, and then the best, another one of my very, very, very favorite lines in the Big Book, you know, is that, you know, alcoholics are people who are unable to control and enjoy their drinking. That's me. It's like, if I'm having 3 or 4 beers, I am not enjoying myself, okay? If I am enjoying myself, I am completely out of control, okay? So I have 3 or 4 beers, that party, and then, you know, the next weekend, I have 4 or 5, and the next weekend, I have 5 or 6, and the next weekend, 6 or 7, you know, and then I'm drinking both nights of the weekend, and, you know, a few months go by, and, like, I'm blacking out again, and I remember I was walking up to my little studio apartment, and I thought to myself, you broke that promise you made to yourself that if you couldn't control your drinking, that you would stop. And I took that thought and I just kind of like filed it back in my brain. And then the next weekend, I did the same thing, you know. And I went out and I got drunk and I got blackout drunk. And guess where I woke up? Does anybody have any ideas? Jail. Exactly. I woke up in jail, you know. And I knew exactly where I was because I'd been there many times before. And you know what else I knew is that they let you go after 4 hours, right? That's how long they hold you, drunk in public, DUI, those kinds of things. So, you know, I patiently sit, watch time come off the clock, 4 hours rolls around. I've been passed out in there, so I know it's been at least 4 hours. And the guy comes over, and I'm like, this is, and I told him, I'm like, this is the time where you let me out. And he looked at me, and he said, why are we going to let you out? I said, because it's been 4 hours and whatever drunken public thing. He's like, oh, you put a taxi cab driver in the hospital with a broken arm. And, you know, I didn't remember an instant of it. And I remember when I was sitting in jail waiting for the 4 hours to go by, I was really disappointed in myself. You know, I was like, man, you're back in jail again. This really isn't cool. And then I remember when he said that to me, that is when I started the first half of my first step, you know, because holy shit, you know, I was like, what happened? Like 5 months before, you know, I was completely convinced that because I hadn't drank for 6 months, that I was no longer an alcoholic, that I had beat this thing, that I was okay. And there I was 5 months later, and I had like fucked up like more than like I had ever managed to fuck up before. Boom. Right? So, get bailed out, aunt and uncle. Go see an attorney on Monday. Attorney looks at it. He's like, oh. He's like, you've got this whole list of alcohol-related violations, and then now you just broke some guy's arm and put him in the hospital. He's like, you know, you're facing like 4.5 years in prison. And I was like, and that was, you know, a further continuance of working on my first step. I remember sitting across from him, and, you know, it's like, fuck, look at me. This shirt is lavender, okay? It's like, these are skinny jeans, you know, like, it's like, I'm like, I hate jail. It scares the living shit out of me. And like, I hate, like, there's nothing I hated more, like, than the time I had to spend in jail. You know, it's just like, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, what? Like, you know, I'm like, I'm going to be a violent felon. I'm going to have to go to prison, you know, and I'm just like, everything, like, this whole grand vision that I had for my life, you know, having been taught that I was the greatest thing since sliced bread, this deteriorated to nothing, you know, and I'm just like, well, I wonder why, you know. And there was one answer. Everybody in here probably knows what that answer is. It's alcohol. You know, and I couldn't get around it anymore. And my attorney looked at me and he said, dude, you got to go to rehab. You got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, you know, every single day. All right? So I did. And, you know, I realized that, you know, at that point, what I was trying to do, you know, to try and shuck and jive and arrange things, just like simply wasn't working for me anymore. So I went to AA meetings. I went to rehab. When I was drinking in college, I dated a girl, and we were great together. So you know, I would wake up in the middle of the night, and the bed would be wet. And there would be this situation where it was like, I'd check if it was me first, and then I would have to check and see if it was her. You know, so like that's, you know, like that was the kind of relationship that we had. We were just both like raging alcoholics. And I hadn't seen her in a while. And so a few AA meetings in, there she was. And I was like, it's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, I've been sober for 2 years. And you know how you can tell when people are like full of shit, you know? And, you know, I looked at her. And, yeah, they are. I probably think I'm full of shit. I looked at her and she's like, yeah, I've been sober for 2 years. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, it's good. And I remember what she was like when I was drinking and, you know, and I talked to her for a little while. And I was like, whoa, no kidding. All right. And you could tell that something had changed in her, and that, you know, she had issues. I had issues. And when I had issues, I knew she had issues. And you could tell that there had been a miraculous transformation that had gone on in her life. And, you know, when you're 22 years old, and this is how old I was, 23 years old, not drinking, by yourself, no program of Alcoholics Anonymous, white knuckling it. When you're 23 years old and you're in the lifestyle that I had and still trying to maintain that, you feel like you're the only 23-year-old on the planet who is not drinking, you know? And you feel like it's not for you. And what I saw in her was, I was like, here's somebody who drank like I drank, who's sober, whose life is better. Okay. And what she did was she walked me around the meeting, and she's like, all right, here's a meeting schedule. These are the meetings you're going to go to. Here's a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. These people are going to be your friends. This one, this one, this. Go ask that guy to be your sponsor. Okay. Okay. He's still my sponsor. I got sober May 19th of 2007. So we're in 2017, which is kind of cool. He's still my sponsor. I love that guy. He's perfect for me. Because I like try and overcomplicate things, you know. Like I try and talk through things and look at all the angles, you know. And he just he doesn't give me an inch when it comes to that kind of stuff. He makes it all so simple. We'll get into that in a little bit, but he's great. I love him to death, and I'm so glad that he's in my life. You know, I was just the best man at one of those people that I was introduced to who would be my friends' weddings. You know, I still go to a lot of those meetings. I actually secretary that meeting. That happened at. Let's see here. Yeah, I still go to a lot of those meetings. So that's pretty cool. I started reading the book. You guys have read the book in here? Probably a lot of you probably. I started reading the book, and like on page 4 of the book, Bill beats up a taxi cab driver. And I remember like going back to my little studio apartment, reading the book, and I remember getting to the part where he beats up a taxi cab driver, and I closed the book, and I looked around the room, and I'm like, they're fucking with me. Like, how'd they do that? You know, it's like David Blaine or something. You know, it was like what car he's thinking about or something. And then I was reading reading a lot of the other stuff that, you know, I talked about. You know, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I was the same exact way, man. I was just like I would be like, I had people, they would like, they looked at me and they're like, dude, you are the most fun person we have ever partied with, or you are the biggest nightmare we have ever seen. Like, this weird thing happened where it was just like, I'd be like dancing on the bar, like having a really great time. And then, like, something weird, this anger and resentment is probably, you know, there's some deep-seated amounts of that inside of me. Anybody can relate to that. And I would just get to this place, and I would just start sucker-punching people. And typically the people who are closest to me, like roommates, friends, like, you know, like they had done something, and they decided to get punched in the ear from behind them. Or I was just causing absolute chaos. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, there was a lot of times, like, as my drinking progressed, it got worse, and it wasn't as much fun as it used to be, and I could really start to feel the effects of, you know, drinking and, you know, it's a emotionally draining thing. When you have to be a piece of shit all the time and hurt, like, all of your family and a lot of the people around you, and you're constantly trying to keep your head above water, you know, like, you know, you've got court fines that you haven't paid, and you're just like, you're driving drunk and you're nervous about that. It's just like, it's just exhausting, you know? And like, there are places where I gotten exhausted, and I had this vision of like what my life was supposed to be like. You know, I was like an athletic kid. Like, I loved playing sports. I loved adventure. My life had become drinking. You know, my life had become drinking and partying. I couldn't do anything fun without booze. You know? And so, it was really scary. And I just remember, like, driving. I remember, like, 3 or 4 instances. Like, that I wasn't drinking, but I just remember having this, like, overwhelming feeling that, like, I will never be able to quit drinking, and I want to so bad. You know? And it was just, like, demoralizing. You know, I remember one of the times it happened, I went walking with my aunt and uncle, you know, down to the beach, and I was watching the guys surfing out in Morro Bay, And I was like, I think that's supposed to be me. You know, but I'm like, but I had this overwhelming feeling that it never would be, because I'd never be able to stop drinking the way that I drank. You know, reading through the book and just being at that, like, jumping off point, you know, where it's just like, we can't imagine our lives with or without alcohol. You know, it really started to speak to me. And I really understood, you know, more about alcoholism, you know, that I was an alcoholic, you know. I didn't want to be an alcoholic, really. Honestly, you know, it's not like I didn't have that on, you know, like the vision board, you know, for my life. I was like, oh, you know, it's like house in, you know, Central California, alcoholic, you know, Range Rover. it wasn't on my vision board, but there was definitely enough evidence for me to, and there was enough information in the book, and there was enough sitting in meetings and listening to people and their experience to come to the realization that, like, oh yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. You're asked to do a lot of really stupid stuff here. At least I thought it was really, really stupid. The first thing my sponsor ever told me, you know, when I had met him, was, you know, I was in all of this, you know, legal hot water, and I'm in the depth of despair. I'm just so, you know, demoralized. And I'm like, okay, what do I do? He's like, well, here's what you're going to do. It's like, every day you're going to do something nice for somebody, and you're not going to tell anybody about it, or else it doesn't count. And I was like, what? I was like, no. Like, did you listen to what I told you is going on in my life? Like, that, how is that supposed to help? Like, that's so far from, like, the path that I need to be on to solve my problems, you know, that it's lunacy. And what will eventually happen to you here, you know, sometimes slowly, sometimes really slowly, is you're going to figure out that this is about love and service. This is about, you know, equipping yourself to be of maximum service to God as you understand it, and to the people about you. That's not how I understood life was supposed to work, but I kept doing it my way, and I kept getting the same thing. And then I had these opportunities, you know, through Alcoholics Anonymous and being of service and working the steps and, you know, sponsoring guys to, you know, be repeatedly shown that it's just like, hey, you're a selfish asshole, and there's nothing, you know, outside of you, you know, that you can fill the hole inside and make you feel different. Frustrating. You know, it's completely frustrating because, like, we've been designed as, you know, human beings in the 21st century to want to fix ourselves, you know, from, you know, the outside in. And it's the inside out. So, you know, I've gotten to do, you know, a lot of, sorry. Okay, good. Period. I haven't drank any of this yet. Thank you. So, you know, talk about my sponsor. He's a genius. He's a mad genius. I call him, and whenever I call him and I'm like, I'm miserable, I'm in so much pain, it's typically when I've gotten dumped, you know, it's typically, like, it has to do with, like, you know, personal relationship. Sometimes it was work for a while. This is what he says to me whenever I call him and I'm in pain. He says, he says it in this voice, congratulations, I am so excited for you. So, you know, that's what he says. When I call him, a miserable man, he's like, I'm so excited for you. And I'm like, what? Dick. What a dick. He does it every single time, too. And the reason he does it is because pain is the great touchstone of spiritual growth. You know, isn't that annoying? You know, and I have certainly, that's certainly been my experience, you know, in sobriety and maybe life before sobriety. Pain is important. So, yeah, welcome to the new people. If you haven't left yet, cool. if you're still here, you know, well, welcome. So, you know, I like to say to people, you know, when they're new, it's just like, I hope you're miserable. You know, I hope you are absolutely miserable. Because when I got here, man, I was miserable. I was in so much fear and pain and anxiety and despair. And, you know, what was good about that is that people said really stupid things that you should do. And I was like, fine, I'll do it. And we'll see what happens. You know, I've had a lot of good opportunities in Alcoholics Anonymous to learn through pain, you know. Because if I'm not in pain, I'm not learning shit, you know. We're just going to figure out, you know, what else I can add, you know, to the outside. And we're going to go, you know, be a jerk or something like that. But when I'm in pain, it's typically when good things start happening. And, you know, I needed a lot of work. And guess what? I still need a lot of work, you know. But I look at Alcoholics Anonymous, and the most beautiful thing about it, to me, is that when I got here, I thought Alcoholics Anonymous meant that these people helped you stop drinking. You know, and that's like the first thing that we do here. And then what you have the opportunity to do, if you are so inclined, is to learn how to become a decent human being and live like a happy, joyous, and free life. You know, like, and we do that here, or we do that through pain, you know. But what I figure out about myself, you know, it's just like, let go. Jesus, let go. I mean, it's like, I got angry and resentful about everything. You know, and it's just like, we learn here, and it's like, oh, it's not on your side of the street? Like, don't worry about it. Yeah, that doesn't happen overnight for everybody. It doesn't happen overnight for me. And it takes time, and there's lots of different ways to learn it. But it really is the truth, you know? And, I mean, when I'm doing a good job of having perspective and gratitude in my life, the thing that I realize is that it's like 98% perfect. Seriously. So it's like, I just went to Europe for a few weeks. Not to say like, oh, I went to Europe for a few weeks and that's why my life is so great. But no, you get to like walk through museums and you get to like literally see hundreds of thousands, you know, of years of just pure human suffering. Okay? Right? You live on the Central Coast in the 21st century. Like, you've hit the human existence jackpot. Okay? Because you're not a peasant in fucking, you know, like the, you know, dark ages in Europe, you know, worrying if you're going to die from dysentery next week. You know, it's like, it's good. And it's like, and I will just take it and make it so miserable because I don't have that, like, last 2% of, like, shit I want in my life. You know? Or it's because, like, this asshole over here or that asshole over there. Like, not you guys. You guys. It's okay, so, yeah. No, not you. You're good. Yeah, good. So, like, didn't do exactly what I wanted them to do, you know? And so I've spent my, like, so much of my life, like, worrying and, like, angry and, like, full of fear that I'm not going to get what I want, or, like, this person's going to do me wrong, or I'm going to lose my job, or this person doesn't like me because of that. And it's freaking exhausting, you know? It's just so exhausting. And what I've, like, learned here, you know, it's just like, all right, I get into pain, what do? You know, I work on, you know, developing a better relationship with whatever it is that's bigger than me in the universe. And whatever it is that's bigger than me in the universe, like, that's what allows me to, like, let go of everything that's external to me and just, you know, take it as it comes. And then also get into service. I have so much. You know, like, I've been given so much in this program and in life, and if I just kind of keep it all for myself and just want to add more, it's like I'm the only, like, you don't want to play with your toys by yourself, you know? Like, share, you know? And I didn't understand that concept. Like, I was alone and lonely, and like, no, like, today, it's like, I look at my life and, you know, being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, I get to share it with a lot of people, you know? And I get to share sobriety, and I can help people, and I can, like, you know, add to the stream of life as opposed to take away from it. So before I got here, I was just like a human parasite, you know? It's just like, if you didn't, like, if you weren't going to drink with me, or if I couldn't get something out of you, like mom and dad, you know, it's just like I didn't want to have anything to do with you. Like, I had no compassion, I had no empathy, and I didn't want any, you know, because I didn't understand the value of it. You know, and with enough pain and enough direction, you know, through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, working with sponsors, working with sponsees, you know, just being a part of that program, you get to learn those kinds of things, you know? And that's been really nice. So, like, the thing I'm really excited about, you know, being in AA is, like, oh, like, I still make my life difficult for myself. It doesn't need to be, you know? It's nuts. But, like, I look at other people. Like, I look at my sister, for example. She grew up in the same household that I did. She's not an alcoholic. I don't think so. But, like, she, you know, she's always worried about what other people think of her. She's worried she's not doing good enough. She's worried about this and that and the other thing. You know, she kind of has, like, the ism without, you know, the alcohol part of it. And I'm like, man, I'm like, you got to just let that go. Or that's inconsequential. Or it's just like, you got a lot. Like, why do you still hate mom, you know, for what she did growing up? I don't hate mom anymore, you know. Like, I did my fourth step. You know, I did my ninth step. I looked at the lady who, like, honestly, when I was drinking, I looked at my mom, and I sat there, and I thought to myself, I'm going to get married and have children just so that I can keep them from her. Like, that was, like, the thing that went through my mind. You know, that's how much I hated my mother. I'm like, I'm going to create a life that she wants to be a part of more than anything, just keep it away from her. Because I was so angry and resentful, you know, towards her because of my childhood and blah, 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 blah. You know what I realized? She did the best that she could with the tools that she had. And she always loved me. And I can spend the rest of my life hating this lady, or I can forgive her and love her for who she is. That's easier. You know? That's a lot easier. Are you a tilted mom? Yeah. I'm sorry. It's okay. But yeah. You know, you get here and, you know, you learn to forgive yourself. You learn to forgive other people. You learn that there's a lifestyle. If you are so inclined to try and equip yourself to be of maximum service to your God and the people about you, that will make it easier on the inside. You know, and that's all we have. You know, that's cool. Brad says that. I know, Robert, you're friends with Brad, but, you know, Brad would always say, he's just like, there's nothing I can see with my eyes or touch with my hands that's going to change the way that I feel on the inside. I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that, you know, I have a perspective on life and I have a way of life because of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in this program that I wouldn't have had ever in a million years. That I think a lot of people in today's world don't have that should. So, for me, like, I'm really grateful to be an alcoholic. I honestly am. Because I can look at the person that I was, and I can look at, you know, the values that I had in life and the way that I just navigated through it. And whether or not, you know, I was causing chaos in my life, you know, because of the way that I drank, you know, I would have still wanted to come and do this just so that I could learn how to live life differently, you know, with more meaning, you know, and add to the stream of it as opposed to just simply take away. And the other thing is like, I know I got to keep coming back because I still piss people off, you know, and I still don't do things perfectly. You know, that's my ex-girlfriend, man. Fucking hates me. There's other people who do too. You know, and so it's like, I don't know, I mean, like, I don't know, I don't know, but, like, I know there's more work for me to do, you know, and if I can stay a part of this program, and when I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, when I'm doing it, like, when I'm sponsoring a bunch of guys, and when I'm going to meetings routinely, and I've got my service commitments, and I'm praying and meditating, you know, whatever else is, like, going on in my life, like, you know, doesn't matter. Like, I feel just so much better, you know. But I go in and out, you know, of, I don't go in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, how much effort and, you know, sort of influence the program has in my life changes. But, man, if I'm here and I'm doing the deal, man, it's good. So if you're new here, you know, I hope you're miserable. Congratulations, I'm so excited for you. You know, as much it's, and it's supposed to be really obnoxious when you hear that.
Yeah.
But keep coming back, so thank you.
Right on.